I'm Tass Mellis of The Starters.
This is Ben Golver with the Open Floor Podcast.
Hi, I'm Kristen Ludlow from NBA Inside Stuff.
I'm OG Anunoby of the Toronto Raptors.
Hey, I'm Elena Deladon, and welcome to the Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, non-binary basketball fans of all ages, races, creeds, colors, genders, and sexualities, welcome to Double Clutch. My name is the Hoops Nerd, Hugh Hopkins, and we have a pretty cool show with us this week. We're going to be getting to our guest in just a few seconds, but joining me is running the show as ever is Captain Kirk Killick. Say hello, Captain.
Hey, hey, hello.
Hey, hey, yeah. And of course, we've got the Czar, Matthew Wellington. He's on post-production today, so thanks when he gets around to doing the audio. But we do have a guest as well that's going to be joining us. You might know him from Hodge on the Nodge. Others know him as Hodgy the Hack. I know him as one of the sweetest guys in NBA in the UK community. And also fellow Sky Sports contributor and all-round lovely chap, it's Stuart Hodge. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to drop you into the show just yet. I don't know where Kirk is with it, but... Anyway, we'll be getting to you in just a few seconds. You might be able to hear us. Can you hear us?
I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Excellent. I look forward to it. By the way, this is some operation you guys have got. I'm loving it.
This is all Kirk. This is all Kirk. He'll be able to drop your video into the screen as well in just a few seconds. But yeah, it's a welcome. Welcome to the show. We've been sort of chatting about getting on a show together for quite some time now, Stuart. So I'm glad we finally actually got round to it. For those who don't know you, you know, it's a lot of people will in the NBA and the UK basketball community. But tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and your love of basketball. How did that all start?
Right, so my love of basketball started, well, maybe love is pushing it a wee bit, but I was first aware of the sport when I bought NBA Live for the Mega Drive in 1994. Well, I say I bought it. It was bought for me by my parents back when I had a Mega Drive console. And then...
What year did you say? 1990 what?
95. And then, 95. Like, so a lot of it was video game based. Then there was Kobe Bryant's NBA courtside for the N64.
Nice.
I had that. And then, to be honest, obviously life gets in the way. You go to uni, all of that kind of stuff. Then in 2011, I bought NBA 2K12 just sort of towards the end of that year when it came out. And since then, I've always had, obviously being a sports journalist, I've had a head for sort of statistical analysis. And I think being able to see how the rosters were constructed, the construction of contracts, the kind of front office side of it took my interest first. Then I started watching some games and I realised that essentially what you're watching is you're watching art unfold in front of you, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it different from other sports. So, yeah, I think that's where the love was, maybe not so much born, as rekindled. And, yeah, like, ever since then, it's been a kind of gradual progression from sort of immersing myself in the video games, then watching some hoops, then obviously sports journalists, so diving in a bit deeper, doing a lot of reading of various sort of things, various publications, various people. Obviously, you develop a liking for certain writers and styles of writing and all of that kind of stuff. And yeah, like it's now come to the point that I'm actually one of the guys writing about stuff and giving out my own opinions in an editorial way. And that's really cool, that progression. And it's wonderful to have the opportunity to do that because there's not many chances, obviously, in the UK to do paid basketball journalism. So I feel very blessed for that.
Yeah, and your stuff is always top notch, just always excellent. And like you said, you know, you've got a sort of cross sports eye for journalism. You do a bit of football commentary as well, don't you?
Yes, I do. I'd like to do basketball commentary, but it's a bit like when I was starting out doing football commentary. I think I had too much respect for it and didn't dive in. Mm. And I'm kind of the same with basketball comms, although I would quite like, obviously, Mark Woods is one of the guys in the sort of British community, maybe speak to him, see if I can go along and maybe do some Glasgow Rocks stuff and then kind of dip my toe in that way. But yeah, I do all sorts of sports stuff, all sorts of writing stuff. I write about technology. There's a kind of vast sort of plethora of interest. And then I've obviously got my own podcast network on my Hodgy the Hack channel on YouTube. HODGEY, the hack, as per what it says on the screen there. And yeah, you can find me doing that. And obviously with Scotland being in the Euros, I've started a Euros daily podcast. So the one blessing when we go out is I'll be able to stop that. But yeah, mate, it's been a great time. It's been really busy recently, but I feel so lucky to be able to do so much work that, that properly empowers me and that I enjoy. So
that's good.
It's not lost on me how lucky I am, you know.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm the same. Like if you can write a, even like doing it, you know, for free, or you know, when I was just starting out, just doing it with Double Clutch, and you know, just it's such a joy to be able to, you know, write and watch basketball and chat about basketball. You know, it's such a privilege, isn't it? We're very lucky to do these things.
Your network of stuff, man, like a Double Clutch is phenomenal. Like I think it's really important. It's got such an important place in the UK space because obviously the UK basketball culture is really growing and beginning to gain momentum now. And I think getting the coverage onto Sky has played a part in that, I must admit, yeah. Because it's widened the kind of demographic of people that, that sort of look at the game and appreciate the game. It's given people like, obviously, Mo Muncey, the Hoop Genius, chance to properly show what he can do. And that's managed, he's now sprouted tentacles that go cross-continent, you know. And I just love seeing that growth of the game over here.
Most definitely.
I think it's so empowering. But you guys were a fundamental part of that in the early stages. And I've got so much respect for that, man. And I've been dying to come on for a while. And I'm so glad that you've got us on tonight.
Yeah, well, we're glad to have you. So let's dive into this week then. It's been a hell of a week. We always start off the show with sort of bouncing around all the main news stories. So let's jump into Around the Association. So, if you didn't notice, the NBA playoffs are on. It has been a week. First, I mean, going back, you know, what, 6-7 days, the injuries came, right? We saw Kyrie Irving go down, and that was shortly after James Harden went down. And he was out for 3 games, and it probably cost the Brooklyn Nets a chance to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, despite heroics from Kevin Durant in that final game. But also Kawhi Leonard went down with an ACL sprain, and Chris Paul was put into COVID safety protocols. It's been a bit of a crazy week and then because of all that happening, King James, LeBron James came down from his heavenly tower, and he sort of had a go at the NBA for not listening to him. You know, he said this at the start of the season. This is all, if you just listen to me, the king, I know everything. So that's been throwing everything off. But all of that came on the same day that about 6 coaches got fired. And we saw, and for some reason, you know, the only ones that are remaining who aren't still playing is Greg Popovich, of course, because he's never going to get fired. And for some reason, Luke Walton is still a coach in the NBA.
That's mental, isn't it? Like, of all the coaches that got fired, Luke Walton's still in a job. Madness.
Shout out Luke Walton. He's obviously got some sort of evidence pack against the owners of that. You know, he's got a dossier somewhere.
Or it's just a really badly run organisation.
Or it's that, yeah. But then, of course, more recently, we had the Nets knocked out by the Milwaukee Bucks in dramatic fashion. And last night we had the Atlanta Hawks beat the Philadelphia 76ers, which means we've not got in either conference, we haven't got a first seed in the conference finals, because the Utah Jazz were also knocked out by the LA Clippers.
First time since 94, I think that's happened.
Something crazy. Yeah. It's been quite a while. And we've also had a couple of other things going on in the world of basketball in the past few days. If you haven't seen today, the women's Team USA basketball team have been announced. And for some reason, Nneka Ogwumike, who is the hero of women's basketball in the past 2 years, quite frankly, not only is she a former MVP, but she is the president of the WNBPA, and essentially made the WNBA happen last year. It was basically a lot down to her. She is the only MVP to have never played in the Olympics for Team USA. So sort yourselves out, Team USA. And of course, since the last weekend, back on these shores, shout out, well, I did it last week, but shout out to Sam Nita and everybody at Hoops Fix for getting the Hoops Fix All-Star Classic off the ground. I don't know how they did it, because they had something like 2 or 3 weeks to put it all together. And of course, it was closed from the public, which was a real shame. But go check out Hoops Fix, because they've been posting all the highlights. They've been posting all the fun side of things, the interviews on the side, the dunk contest, the 3-point shootout, men's and women's games. Everybody go support Hoops Fix, because they're doing great work for British basketball over there. But let's get into it then, Stuart. Let's start talking about the conference finals. We've already seen one game of the Western Conference Finals. That was, of course, the Phoenix Suns and the LA Clippers. It was an excellent game one. We had it going down to the wire pretty much. And it was actually really interesting to see the fact that CP3 wasn't playing. He's out for a few days with coronavirus protocols. I'm not sure if he tested positive, but a tweet from Chris Haynes in the past few days means that he is past certain, he hasn't got as many, he hasn't got symptoms. So basically they're thinking that he might be able to get back for game three. I'm not sure about game two yet, but we'll have to wait and see. But the thing that I was excited about was the fact that they didn't have CP3, they didn't have Kawhi Leonard, and it was a really exciting game. And it just goes to show that I think Paul George has actually taken a bit of a step up in this playoffs. We've seen him year after year be the butt of people's jokes. You know, he was playoff P, which nobody had ever called him. And then he was pandemic P, because, you know, he was crap last year. But he's sort of shaken that off this year, and he's really come into his own. What do you think, Stuart?
Yeah, I actually wrote a piece about this, because I'm really happy for him, because Paul George was always a good player, and he's particularly had to step up to the plate with Kawhi going down. And what he quite rightly pointed out in his interview was he's led a franchise before. This is not unknown territory for him. In Indiana, he was the man. And it's just nice to see, because Paul George has always been a player that I've quite liked, and it's not been nice to see struggles in the postseason. And I think appointing yourself a nickname, you're always setting yourself up for a fall. And it was just complete derision for the playoff P, and then obviously the pandemic P. But he has been playoff P, like in the right sense, with the Clippers this year. And when it came time to deliver against the Jazz, he really stepped up and he did the business for them. And that was something that I enjoyed seeing. And it was nice to see as well the Clippers. I just like the way that roster's constructed, actually. I think Reggie Jackson's playing some fantastic basketball. Terrence Mann's obviously had a massive game seven for them. And it's
Can we talk about that?
Yeah.
Terrence Mann is earning himself a pretty big contract in the not too distant future, I'm pretty sure. Like, let me, I should have pulled up his stat line beforehand. But like you said, that I think people have slept on their depth a little bit. You know, they do have players beyond Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. I mean, Patrick Beverley has become a bit of a butt of the joke ever since Luka Doncic sort of embarrassed him. But the rest of the squad have really shown that there's a reason you and I and other people, and I think Mike Miller also at the start of the year really liked the LA Clippers. I thought they were a finals contender, and I did last year as well, but they choked.
I think they've got a better coaching structure this year. That's making a difference, I think.
Yeah, so talk about that a little bit then. So they obviously got rid of Doc Rivers, who, interestingly, has just been kicked out of the, because he's coaching the Philadelphia 76ers now, and quite rightly, whether or not he choked or whether his point guard did, we'll get into that in a little bit. But so they've got a new coach this year. And what have you seen that's different about this season?
So I think the style of basketball that they're playing seems a lot better. I think your point about the depth is correct. I mean, if you look at the point guards, Pat Bev, for all of the what you're talking about, I still think Pat Bev's a cracking tenacious point guard and can be an energizer from a defensive standpoint. He's never going to give you too much on the offensive side of the floor, but I think makes a difference that way. Counter that with Reggie Jackson, and then the craft and guile and basic basket vogue savantness that that Rajon Rondo's got. And then you've got, I think, Zubats is a decent big man, and Boogie Cousins coming in and giving massive minutes in that first.
Oh, yes, sir. I can boogie.
Suns. Yes, sir. And it wasn't all night long. That was the only thing.
It wasn't. It was for about 8 minutes.
He got in foul trouble. Like, I think he had like as many fouls as minutes at one point. It was nice to see it. Like, and that, I think it was that dunk that he threw. Who did he throw it down on? Escapes me right now. But anyway, that dunk that he threw down, I think it was for his first field goal, and you're just like, oh, Boogie Cousins is back. And then he hits one for the top of the key, and you're like, oh, yeah, you used to be really good, didn't you? And it's nice to see, and I just think that their depth and every area of the court, they're well covered, and both in terms of their sort of starting five, whatever way they choose to cook it, and in terms of their depth. So I think that they're good fun, but I don't like them as much as I like the Suns. I think the Suns are absolutely incredible. I think it's a travesty that Monty Williams didn't get Coach of the Year. When you look at the leap that some of those role players have taken in that Suns team, and also the way that he's managed to get the roster working one for each other. And the big one for me personally is DeAndre Ayton. DeAndre Ayton finally looks like, I mean, given the draft he was taken in, it's going to be tough to deliver in and being the sort of number one pick from that draft. But he's like, he's put himself into the top five category now anyway, you know, and probably going to stay there, because it's like all of the tools that we saw that he had that he was kind of polishing and developing. It's really good to see them coming together. And then the biggest part of it all, well, we've not even mentioned Chris Paul because he didn't play in the game. Obviously, I really want to see him get his ring, and if that this is probably going to be his best chance to do that maybe this year, given that he's at this stage and hopefully he gets some time in the floor in both, which I think he will because he should be out of COVID protocol soon enough, and hopefully it stays that way. But the big thing for me is, right, we've got so many young superstars around the league right now and stories about dissatisfaction with Zion Williamson. You've obviously got the board getting flipped in Dallas. Whether that's to appease Doncic or not, we don't know. I'm kind of reading between the lines and thinking it might be. But regardless of all of that, Devin Booker's played in some absolutely rotten teams in Phoenix. And he's just stayed there with like the 70-point game and stuff. And he's just doing his bit, not making too many noises. And finally, he's been surrounded by a roster that's, well, at least this year, is a contender. And it's brilliant to see. And what a way to time your first career triple-double, eh? Like, 40-point triple-double. Get in there, Devin Armani Booker, man.
Yeah, it's been incredible to watch. I think going back to what you're saying about the Clippers, the changing coaching has meant that, so what some of the analysis I did earlier in the year was about how I spoke to Ty Lue about it, and he wanted to get a lot more drive and kick. Last year it seemed to be sort of setting Kawhi up for moves in the post and running five out a little bit, sort of trying to get Paul George and Kawhi to play off the dribble and just attack the basket with no one under the rim. But this year they've been passing the ball around a lot more, and those two main guys, they've been doing a lot of driving still, but it's been driving to kick rather than driving to score. It's been getting more players involved. So I think that's one of the main changes that we've seen.
Stay left on top, yeah.
Yeah, and then moving to the Phoenix Suns. Yeah, I mean, Monty Williams has done a fantastic job. I think there's a couple of different things that have been going on. First of all, that team was incredible last year, right? They didn't have their big man for 25 games.
Yep.
You know, they started off a little bit slow. Ricky Rubio wasn't the player that they probably needed. You know,
he couldn't. I love him.
But he can't shoot. Love him, the poor guy. So he was sort of an area where they could upgrade, and they did upgrade that. They moved Chris Paul in And he has not just, you know, remember, they went 8-0 in the bubble. They
people
were within a hair's whisker of actually making the playoffs. They didn't, unfortunately, but they might have done. They probably wouldn't have got too far last year. I think they were still a bit young, but they showed that they were capable. So bringing in this veteran now, who he no longer has to carry the team for four quarters, he can just come in at the end and steer the ship, calm everybody down, get the studs playing three and a half quarters, and then the final quarter, that's where Chris Paul really shines. He controls the game. But let's not do a disservice to Monty, because Monty Williams has put some new plays in. Everybody's the amount of times I've heard a Spain pick and roll this year is quite infuriating, honestly, in some respects. But he's thrown in a lot of new actions and a lot of new triggers. That means that more players get open, and more players get open in the spaces that they need it. You get DeAndre Ayton rolling to the rim. He's shooting, it feels like every game he shoots 95%. On top of that, you're getting the space opening up in between. Because nobody wants Devin Booker or Chris Paul to shoot threes, even though Chris Paul has been a bit banged up with his shoulder, he's still shooting it. And that's been opening up that space in the middle where Chris Paul and Devin Booker shine. But you've also got those good defensive guys on the perimeter as well. So it's a really well-constructed team. And I think, yeah, I'm with you. I really like what they're doing. And I think I hope Kawhi gets back. There is talk that his ACL injury isn't as bad, but they haven't released a lot of details on it, honestly. So the sources are a bit vague on that one. Hopefully we'll get to see him back, because I wrote in my piece a few days ago that if Kawhi doesn't play, then it's going to be a wasted trip to the conference finals for the Clippers.
That. I can see that, actually. I think they really need him if they're going to have a chance at getting through, which is testament to that Suns team you talk about. I mean, the other aspect that really impresses me is the shooting and the fluidity with which they managed to find the shooters on the perimeter. It's lovely basketball to watch. It's one of the types of basketball that I really enjoy. I think the other aspect of it, as you say, I mean, how well does it bode for them that in such a tense and close game against, well, obviously a fellow contender, they didn't need Chris Paul. Devin Booker stepped up and everybody else stepped up and managed the game the way that Chris Paul would have wanted to manage the game as well, had he been there.
Shout out Campaign.
Campaign was brilliant. And I thought the other, Cam Johnson, was really good as well.
Yeah.
They've just got so many fun pieces. Bridges as well. Like, the best cutter in the league, I heard, was mentioned in commentary potentially. And like, he is really good at cutting to the basket. And It's the way that the pieces work together, because they expect that of them. And it's the same way, like, in that alley-oop in transition. Devin Booker knew what he had to expect from his teammate. I think it was Torrey Craig that put that away. And it's just, like, it seems like the Suns, everything is working in cohesion. And I think that's what makes them, and this, I don't know how hot a take this is, but they're my favourites for it at the moment. I think they look like the team likeliest to do it. And
so
I think
all the planets are aligning for the Suns. Is that what you're saying? Is that a
Mercury in retrograde. I think it looks that way. I think it looks like it could be their year. I mean, what... The only thing that I think could stop them is if the Bucks manage to turn, if that's what the finals ends up being, if the Bucks manage to turn it into the kind of game that allows them to.
So let's get on to that other one then. We got on the Eastern Conference side, we've got the Milwaukee Bucks versus the Atlanta Hawks. Now, this is a team that were pretty far out of the playoffs. Halfway through the season, then bring in Nate McMillan and hey ho, you've got a playoff team.
What a job. I mean, no harm to Lloyd Pierce, but I mean, it's levels, isn't it? Because I think Nate McMillan's come in and everything has just, it's almost like all of the bits were there and he just managed to construct them together in a way.
The problem was is that not all the bits, you know, they did have a lot of health issues at the start of the year. Now they've lost, you know, DeAndre Hunter. You know, they will miss him, which is why possibly I would maybe give Milwaukee Bucks the edge at the moment. But I think the fact that, you know, they've got Gallinari back, they've got who is their other boy that was their other guy. There was another injury that they were facing. And Bogdanović, you know, he's come back. He's been on fire, quite frankly. He's been excellent. Not just, and I'm so proud because, like, I was sitting on that hill. I had a flag planted at the top of the Bogdanović hill. So I'm really pleased to, and the thing is, like, he could have been on that Bucks squad. He could have been on the Milwaukee Bucks at the start of the year. That's the crazy thing. So he's going up against that team. It's going to be great to see. What are you seeing for that series then? What's going to really shout out to you?
I think, to be honest, it's kind of a bit of a cop-out an answer, but is it going to run in a way that Trae Young is able to get absolutely rolling? Because, and I think the one thing I would say is, obviously in that Game 7, it shows how good the rest of Atlanta's team is, that he shot so poorly, and yet they managed to prevail against the top seed, you know?
We haven't had a big Trae Young game for a couple of weeks now.
It's been a wee while, and the thing is, do you know what? That kid was getting hated on in college, I think in high school even, you know? Like, there was that constant opposition fans really getting in his face and going against him. And then, obviously, his first two games at the Garden just set the tone for playoff Trae Young. That kid is made for this stage, and he's been absolutely brilliant. But I think if he can get going, both in terms of his own scoring and just dishing those lobs up, because it was a conveyor belt to the rim at times, I thought. Disappointingly so. I mean, I think Joel Embiid's defense in that series as a whole was very questionable. And obviously all of the fingers are pointing at Ben Simmons, which we'll probably come on to. But I think Joel Embiid has to ask himself some quite serious questions after that as well. And the fit in Philadelphia just isn't a fit, is it? So...
We'll come on to that in a bit. I think with the Bucks, though, I think they, with the Hawks, I think they had they had too many areas where the Sixers didn't really have ways to shut it down. I mean, yeah, you've got Trae Young might not have been going off, but he could stretch the floor, which gave one of the things I'm really impressed with. Is John Collins, right? I was so worried when they brought in Clint Capella. I thought this is going to really hamper him.
Yeah, because they're
both sort of, you know, rolling to the basket kind of guys. But John Collins, to be fair, has really developed this year. He's become more, a bit more of a slasher. He still does the pick and roll into the rim, but he's developed more of an outside game. He's not the best shooter in the world, but he can shoot it and he can be a bit of a threat out there.
Mid-range is decent as well. And like, as he's rebounding, just means that he can't take him out of the team because he's just so good at eating the glass.
Yeah. And Clint Capella is probably a better defender than him, but they're different defenders. You know, I don't think John Collins is a negative. I think he's, you know, he'll play his opposite number to, you know, to a pretty neutral standard. And I think he's one of the more improved players this season because he's just added to his game. He's still getting the same sort of numbers, but it's the way that his game has evolved and grown up.
Just on the Bucks, I'd one wee point I was going to come on to with that. And I think what that series will hinge on, is it going to be a Trae Young series or is it going to be a Giannis series? Because for all of the complementary parts in either team, those two teams are so massively reliant on their star player. And Giannis Antetokounmpo has been good in these playoffs, but I mean, I still think a healthy. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the old super team thing, but I suppose more of a new thing. But I don't like the way the Brooklyn Nets were going about it, and there's almost a sense of poetic justice that they didn't have all of their stars literally aligning at any one time when they needed it. But I think there's a lot to be said for the Bucks players. I'm not really sure that Mike Budenholzer is the long-term answer there in terms of getting an answer out of them, but then they could win a chip. So it's like it's such a delicate balance, but that's the difference that having a Giannis Antetokounmpo standard player can have for you. And I just wonder if he's ever going to develop that outside shot, because if he develops that, you cannot defend the guy.
I mean, yeah, it's the shooting, really, and I think it's something that is worth a deeper dive at some point. Maybe not for tonight, but you know, we see Luka Doncic really struggling in the playoffs from the line. We see Ben Simmons, who's a mess from the line. Giannis Antetokounmpo, why can't these star players shoot from free throw anymore?
Anyway, yeah, well, it's very, very interesting, and it's one of those things. Like anyone I know that's just because there's loads of people, and it's great in the UK that are just getting into basketball. And one of my mates who comes into that bracket was like, how can these guys not shoot free throws? Because in his head, obviously he's a football fan, he's thinking that's like a penalty kick, you know? Like you should score more of them than you miss.
Yeah.
And that's the way he definitely thinks about it. And I just think it's very interesting. Luka in particular, because every other shot in the court, like whether it's sideways or his hand behind his back or whatever, like he can pull it off. So
it's just, I think it's just all mental, you know. And it's that I remember there was a few years ago there was Tim Duncan. Well, when Tim Duncan first entered the league, he was a pretty decent free throw shooter. He wasn't the best, but he was solid. In the middle part of his career, he had this sort of habit of just freezing with the ball. He was holding the ball and he would just sort of look and almost sort of zone himself out. And a few years later, working with Chip England, the legendary shooting coach there, he ended up sort of saying to him, don't pause, just the moment you get the ball, just put it up. And you see people like DeAndre Jordan also going through a similar thing where instead of thinking about the shot, his sort of routine is to talk to someone who is standing at the free, you know, on the edge, ready to get the rebound. You know, he'll be chatting to his friend and he'll dap him up and then he'll receive the ball and he'll just throw it. And it's to get him out of the thought process of just staring at a rim with, you know, 100,000 people watching you, or well, maybe not that many, but 20,000 people watching you. And it must be a mental thing, I think, with Luka. With Giannis, I think it's possibly a little bit mental as well. With Ben, I think his shooting is
it's just ruined. It's mental. Yeah. It's everything. I mean, Ben Simmons is... I mean, I had quite a hot take on this. It was just after the game, and I did put it with a question mark. But I thought, rookie of the year to bust like Michael Carter-Williams, is that what we are talking about here? Like, is that what we're talking about? I mean, I'll be honest, I don't think it's at that level yet. But if his confidence just disappears down a black hole, and especially with the fact that Doc Rivers didn't come out and defend him.
Yeah.
Right, I think.
And Joel Embiid was saying after the game that someone asked him where the game turned, and he said, well, I don't know how to say this, but it was when we didn't get an open layup and we missed a free throw. And it was sort of like, there's only one person you're talking about.
Yeah.
So, well, let's move on to that then. So we've spoken about the conference finalists, but... when you move on to the conference finals, a bunch of teams fall out. We've been skirting around 76ers a little bit. It's time, isn't it? Embiid, Simmons, they've got to split them up.
I think, well, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. Definitely Ben Simmons is not a point guard, right? For all his playmaking ability, he's not a point guard.
I think he can be. But
if he learns to shoot.
I think it's the team around him. You need to completely restructure the team. A team with Ben Simmons running point needs to be a run and gun team. You need to have four shooters around him. You know, and they need to be just getting up and down. He is one of the most dangerous people in the open court in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
So get him running. And anytime you're in a half court, you need four players who can run off screens, run back pick and rolls, a bit like just give me the floor with four JJ Reddicks.
Or just hack him and put him in the lane.
That's not going to... Honestly, I think if you have other people on the court, first of all, you can just start passing the ball and letting other people bring the ball up the court. There are ways around it. The reason why it doesn't work with the 76ers and the reason why you've got people playing Hacker Simmons is because actually the other guys on the court, they're not great free throw shooters, and they're also not... They're all big players, you know? It's great to have that size as a defensive unit, but when no one can get a shot beyond about 20 feet, you know, regularly, that is an issue. He is the spotlight for it. But outside of Seth Curry, who can you really rely on?
No, you're right. So here's just a couple of names to throw at it, right? And obviously there's like an Doc Rivers connection here, but what if you take Reggie Jackson and Luke Kennard, say? Is that enough to make a difference, do you think? Like, or and maybe one more, right? Like, another player that they can shoot a wee bit. Is that enough? Now, I'm not sure it is, because for all that people have trusted the process, I think constantly there's been a jarring fit between those guys. And I think it's always been like, it's almost like it's been stuck in a kind of weird flux state in Philadelphia of two different teams trying to emerge, and you're seeing different elements of both of them at different times looking not too bad, but never enough where there's an established style. And I think Embiid became, obviously, especially with the production that he had this season, MVP contender, has become the kind of de facto leader. But the questions over his health make you question whether long-term he's the man you should stick with. Then Ben Simmons, now you're looking at a player that's confidence could disappear down a black hole, you know? And that's massively difficult to come back from. I would previously, as much as I like Embiid, prior to this season, I would have said, right, build around Simmons, build the team around him. But now the state that has got to be Ben Simmons just in that situation, it's similar to, so obviously I'm a Magic fan, Markelle Fultz, right? Totally different reasons, different circumstances, but there's something wrong with the culture in Philadelphia where these guys are getting to a stage where it's just like, you know what, we need to get out of here. And you look at the return that they got for Markelle Fultz, it was daylight robbery for Jeff Weltman to do that deal. And I think it will be similar. Because the thing is, everybody in the league has seen that. Mm-hmm. So if they're under pressure to try and deal Simmons, and it's an awful contract to try and get rid of as well, when you think of the way that the league is now and it's so reliant on outside shooting, you're looking at a guy that cannot shoot pretty much at all. And you're with a contract of that size, and don't get me wrong, obviously can do loads of other things really well, but you're then thinking, right, so what is your actual realistic return for that? And I'm not sure it's that great.
I mean, if you are an optimist like I am, I think you can run him at the point. I think there will be people who will want to trade for him. But last year they were talking about perhaps getting, you know, a Dame Lillard or a CJ McCollum for him. I think that's probably, that boat might have sailed now. You're going to have to throw in perhaps another first to do that. But let's move on, because another team has gone out. Another top seed, Utah. I mean, we won't spend too long on this because I can't imagine we've got too many Utah fans listening at the moment. But let's pay them their respect. They were the team to beat all year. So what went wrong for this squad?
I just, again, maybe I'm unfair. I'm one of these people. I can be a bit stubborn. Once I've made a decision, it's like you're going to have to convince me otherwise to shift it. And as much as I rate Quinn Snyder as a coach in terms of what he can do in making teams, making the best of what he's got with teams in terms of making the parts work together and instilling a good work ethic and all of that, I think there's limitations to what he can do as a coach. I think if you've got a Rudy Gobert type player in the modern NBA, for all his stifled tower sort of abilities, I just look at it and I think, if you're not offering more offensively, then, I mean, what are you doing in terms of offering something that can open up the court for the likes of a Donovan Mitchell? And Donovan Mitchell was very much the one sort of part of things that made me think that Utah did have a chance, and there were some really big games that he had. In fact, in the last 2 years in the playoffs, there's an argument to say that he's been the best player consistently across the last couple of years because he's been fantastic for them. Obviously, you had 2 sixth man of the year candidates, so there was lots to like about, and the other Bogdanović. So there was lots to like about that Utah squad, but I just look at it and I just don't. Again, I think if you don't have the right pieces for the modern NBA identikit, then you're not going to get to the point where you can actually progress and well, win a chip or even make the NBA finals, I don't think. And this was an opportunity for so many teams this year, for the likes of a Utah Jazz. Yeah. And I mean, teams like the Suns and the Hawks have stepped into it and relished it and totally taken advantage of it. But with so many players going down, and with so many teams suffering from ill health and all the rest of it, this is an opportunity for teams to really sort of maybe steal a ring, you know? Like, they're not always going to get a chance where LeBron's dropping out in the first round, you know? So I think with that in mind, and do you know another team that I would kind of put into the Jazz bracket and I think would be in the exact same situation if they weren't in the East, is the Bucks. I think the Bucks, just because I think the limitations are similar, because they've got certain players that can't do certain things. Versatility is king in the modern NBA. The more players that you've got that can do a bit of everything, the better, particularly in the offensive end, because obviously good offense beats good defense and Adam Silver basketball. So I think that's where I kind of stand on it. And I think the Jazz are just limited because they've got too many players that just don't have that great versatility that you need. And Rudy Gobert is a prime example of that. And it was interesting to see him get dunked on so much.
Yeah. I mean, well, he gets dunked on because he goes up for them. And that's, you know, I think he does get a bit of a bad rep. People don't like Rudy Gobert for various reasons. And I think he... I'm sure. Like, but I think when he gets into a highlight, on the wrong end of a highlight, people make a lot of fun of him, when actually not many people go up for dunks, to defend dunks in the same way that he does. So I'm all for him. I think what you said at one point was interesting, that they are missing something that, you know, I think it changes them to work in the modern NBA. I think that is a forward, essentially. I love Royce O'Neal. I think he brings a lot to the party, but I think he is, I think he's a backup 3/4 at best. You know, they need, unfortunately, they do have size in terms of some of the guys are big and can play off big offensively. But, you know, they've got Rudy Gobert. I think their best player, Donovan Mitchell, 6'4", and I think he's a small 6'4". And I think he plays the wing position. I think they try and play him almost like, you know, point guard all the way through to small forward. And really, you need someone else who's a bit bigger in that small forward, power forward position to be able to. I'm thinking like, you know, Carmelo Anthony 5 years ago, you know, where he was still productive. I mean, he's doing okay these days, but, you know, where he was, you know, a big body that you could throw the ball to and get a score, he wouldn't necessarily get a stop, but that's why you'd bring on Royce O'Neal after that. But we've been going along already. I can't believe the time already. So what we're going to do is we're going to fly through a couple of things now. So you're not here every week, but I did forewarn you a little bit about this. We're going to go into our next section, and it's a weekly question sent in by one of the Double Clutch contributors, Nick Whitfield. He always sends in Nick's silly nonsense.
Nothing but Nick's silly nonsense.
Now then, this week, Nick's Silly Nonsense says, when I learned that Converse was re-releasing its iconic weapon model, I was super excited. This was the shoe in which Larry Bird and Magic Johnson went toe-to-toe in, after all. My excitement was short-lived, however, when I saw that the new version looked something like the Spice Girls would have worn in 1996. So my question to you is, if you had to compare each of the Spice Girls to a current or former basketball player, who are you choosing and why? Stuart Hodge.
Right, I've given this a bit of thought now. A couple of wee provisos just thrown in. First one is, the reason my internet has been dodgy is I'm literally just off a plane and had to. I got here at about a minute to the hour, so that's why I'm struggling. And I got halfway through my team, so some of these are going to be on the hop. But I'll give you the ones that I'm happy with first. Steph Curry, Baby Spice.
Oh, okay.
Right, because
the baby faced assassin. I like that.
It's the baby faced assassin. Is the element of Steph Curry smiles a lot. Emma Bunton and the Spice Girls smiled a lot. And when I was a wee guy, my favourite Spice Girl was Emma Bunton, and my favourite basketball player, Steph Curry. Yeah. So okay. I'm going with that. This one might be odd. So it's the other Splash Brother as Sporty Spice, right? Which, okay. Yeah, I can see the confusion on your face. It's like, there's not a very good reasoning behind this at all, but it's something about, see, particularly when he's like in the Orient and Clay is sort of posting all these wacky videos and stuff, there's something about the way he wears his clothes reminds me of, I can never remember which one's Mel B and Mel C, but whatever one's Sporty Spice.
Okay, like, Mel C is Sporty Spice.
Right, so like, she wears her hats kind of sideways and stuff. I've seen Clay do that. I've seen him wear some like really cool tracksuit bottoms and tracksuit tops. So I'm going with that for Sporty Spice. So
hold on. Mm-hmm. Clay or Seth Curry for Sporty Spice?
No, so this is Clay Thompson I'm going for.
Okay. Right. Okay.
So yeah, I'm going as in Golden State Warriors Splash Brothers.
Okay. Yeah, right. I'm with you.
Not Seth Curry. He's not part of this.
I think you said brother earlier. You might have just said Splash Brother. And I didn't hear you. But I thought you were on about Seth Curry. That was very confused.
No.
I'm with you now.
No, okay. China Clay is Sporty Spice. That's what I'm getting at.
Okay. Yeah. Right? I see it.
then we get into the realms of. So I was sitting for ages trying to think of who Scary Spice could be. Right. And like my brain went to, because of the hair, like I was thinking Lucas Nogueira at one point. Like I was thinking, okay. I can see a similarity with the hair there. But then I was thinking, who is the scariest? Well, maybe not the scariest, but the most intimidating player. Like, because that's what scary means, isn't it? Right. Yeah. And she was probably the most brash and forceful with the Spice Girls. I think is that a fair assessment?
I think I might know where you're going. Yeah, go on.
Right. Dwight Howard, circa.
Whoa! I was that.
What were you thinking?
I was thinking you were going Jimmy Butler.
No. I'm going for Dwight. And there's maybe a bit of Magic sort of fan kind of kicking in.
I'm not so sure about that one. That because Dwight Howard seems too playful to me. I think he doesn't have the even though Mel B was playful with it. I think she was also, you know, she could be a little bit savage on times, and that's why I was thinking Jimmy Butler. But
do you know what? I like that actually. I actually like your reasoning there. I think maybe I'm thinking like lip sync battle era Mel, you know, like I don't know.
But, I'm with you.
No,
yeah.
I think I was just thinking who's the most intimidating opponent. I was thinking Scary Spice, scary basketball player. The player I would least like, I mean, obviously not me playing basketball because I'm terrible, but the player I would least like to have faced if I was an NBA player would have been Dwight when it was in
the Stan Van Gundy era. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so that's me there. Then we get to the ones that I've no picked yet. Posh Spice, I was trying to think who was the poshest basketball player that I could potentially think of. And then I got into the realms of thinking of a basketball player that has married someone that's arguably even more famous. And like Odom was where my brain went with that. So I was thinking like someone who's married on to someone who is, and it reminds me of the Ali G interview when he said, what was the line? It was like they were talking about Brooklyn Beckham. Does he want to be a footballer like his dad or a singer like Mariah Carey?
So I had for Posh Spice, I was thinking she was always a little bit more quiet, wasn't she? And she was always like the most fashionable. And so I thought maybe you never actually hear from Russell Westbrook. Like you don't off the court when it's not a post game press conference. Like, yeah, when it's not a post-game press conference, when it is a post-game press conference, he can be moody. He can be a little bit like, well, what are you talking about? You know, but then when it's away from the court, you don't actually hear from him. And I think that's the same as Posh. And also the fashion sense, you know, he is the wackiest fashion sense, but also, you know, it's kind of cool. Like, you've got to give it to him. So yeah that's where I went with it.
So and then that obviously leaves Ginger, and I was kind of torn. Now I'm not sure. Is Kevin Herter's hair is it actually red?
That is very red. It's they call him something, the Velvet Assassin or something.
But it's weird under the lights of a court. It doesn't always look that way. And I sometimes wonder if it's the lighting that's being deceptive. And that made me think it's kind of between him and Davis Bertans for like the Ginger. You know,
just a heads up. So Ross, shout out Ross, who's you know, been a contributor for us in the past and is always in the audience. He said Kuzma for Posh Spice. That's not a bad idea. But
so I'm just trying to think of the kind of rationale here. So it's like he's got all these talented other people beside him, and he's kind of slightly posing as part of the group,
just about
on the level to be there, you know.
And he also suggested Ginger Spice has to be Brian Scalabrine, which I sort of understand. You know, he's very brash, he's very loud. Obviously, he's ginger, so that seems like a good fit to me.
That seems like can he do a Boston accent? It seems like the ultimate ginger. I know that was rubbish.
No, that was terrible.
I tried.
You tried. No, that's cool. Yeah, I like it. No, that was good. I like that. Also, I think it's possibly, I don't know, it's a conference finalist, maybe not a champion, but that's a good lineup right there.
It's decent. And also, can I say, by the way, credit to Nick. That was my favourite basketball teaser I think I've ever been posed with, so thank you.
Yeah, Nick's always got silly nonsense for us. So come back next week and we'll talk some more silly nonsense. But let's dive into, we got a couple more sections then to ramble through. We get a lot of listener questions from our Discord channel. If you're not on Discord with us, come join us. It's really fun. We have lots of different rooms where we chat about silly things. We also have what's it called? A football, that kicky game. Yeah, we have a chat. We've opened a chat for that just for the Euros. Even though we're not big football people, due to popular demand, we buckled. But some of the things that we do each week is we talk about the discourse on Discord, and some of the things that have been coming up this week, especially after that Nets game, where they talked about it on Sky Sports as well. Mo was talking about it, where he was saying if Kevin Durant was wearing size 17, yeah, which he actually is, mm-hmm, rather than size 18, which he likes to wear, then his foot might have been behind the three-point line and he might have won that game in regulation rather than sending it to OT. So, yeah, what do you make of this phenomenon of his feet? I don't know if we've got it. I should have given Kirk a picture of his feet to put up, but they are freaky. Have you seen his feet without any shoes on?
I've never seen a picture of his feet, but even the knowledge that such a thing exists as a size 18 shoe is a frightening prospect to me. I mean, I'm a size 7, which is quite discreet for a man, you know? So, like, I mean, those must be like boats. You know what I mean? They must be absolutely massive.
Crazy thing, right? Mm-hmm. So Shaq is size 23.
Yeah, but like, Shaq's just not a real human,
that's,
is
that's
it?
Bigger than my head. That's crazy.
But, I mean, he kind of defies the proportionality of human beings, let's be honest. I don't think Shaq you can even put in the same discussion as any of the rest of us.
Elliot from Hoopin' and Lootin' is saying that Shaq was size 21, but I'm going to Google this. I'm pretty sure there's...
Right, while you're doing that, just on the Kevin Durant thing, one of my favourite pieces I've written this year was there was a cracking interview with PJ Tucker after, I think it was Game 6, and he was talking about, obviously, Texas Longhorns connection there, and he was talking about just the way they yap at each other in the court and the fiery competitiveness between them and what it's like trying to guard Kevin bloody Durant, you know? Like, because, I mean, that is... It's unfathomable how difficult that must be. And he was just talking about how he just basically tries to get him to do something different every time. He'll get him full court sometimes, go over, go under, like all of the different stuff. And obviously, like the kind of scene setting is a bit outdated now because it was leading into the sort of culmination of that series. But it was a really fascinating piece to write. And if you Google PJ Tucker, Kevin Durant, Sky Sports, it'll probably come up. It was some fascinating insight. And do you know what? Like, so many basketball press conferences can be a bit dry and a bit sort of like just coming out with hackneyed cliches a wee bit, you know? It was just so refreshing to see such a brilliant press conference. And that was why, like, I transcribed it in full and thought, do you know what? I'm building a piece around this. It was brilliant.
I'm just linking to that in the chat if people do want to go take a little look at it. Quite rightly, I think that friendship as well. You know, they've got Chippy. I think there was also a great video circulating. Clearly, PJ Tucker gets on with Kevin Durant's mum as well, and you know they were having a little chat on the sideline. It was a great battle and a great series. I really enjoyed watching it. So let's go into some Discord listener questions. Then, you just a heads up, you don't have to just send listener questions on Discord. We'll take them from all social media. But this week, most of them have come from Discord. Tom Hall, let's go a bit quick fire here. So Tom Hall, who was on the show with me last week, he said, with the return of Big Owl to Boston, are the Celtics the most handsome roster in the NBA, and should they add Kelly Oubre for this reason? Who's the most handsome roster in the NBA?
Oh, that's tough. I mean, I want to say the Orlando Magic is all sort of strapping young men for the most part now. we're a very small average age, but I'm just thinking of the Celtics roster. I don't think Marcus Smart's particularly handsome. He's the heart of the franchise.
No. But he brings down the average, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does a bit. But Jason Tatum's a good-looking guy.
Jaylen Brown's very handsome, not
to give too many clues, I'm not that into men, but Jaylen Brown's like, I think he's a right handsome guy and got a good intellect as well. Al Horford is like, he's you imagine him to be quite debonair, don't you? Like,
no, God, it's the eyelashes, man. Yeah. So my only shout to perhaps challenge it is the Portland Trailblazers. They've got a couple of good looking dudes. Okay. All right. That's the sign to move on.
The production in this is outstanding.
So let's move on to the next question from Ben Bean. Does Kemba Walker actually play for OKC next year, or is he more of a Carmelo Anthony in Atlanta and gets moved quickly?
Anything could happen with that. The OKC are in an interesting space. I mean, what they might do is what they've done with a few other players, where they keep them for long enough and then trade them for more picks. Because like, they just want all the picks.
And I think you could probably still get a first round for, you know, protected, obviously. But I think for Kemba, I reckon he might garner a first round from the right team. That being said, I think it's very sad to see, because I like Kemba Walker, but I think his future is going to be on a bottom dweller in the NBA.
It's such a shame, because like, he obviously had so long at the Hornets, who were pretty much that most of the time, you know?
Yeah.
And I was looking forward to him getting a chance with the likes of a Boston, but it's just, it's just never really come together. The fit was never right. To be honest, like the whole restructure there, I'm kind of disappointed about that because I wanted to see Brad Stevens get a chance to coach a really good team. I think the move totally makes sense. He's a fantastic basketball mind. But I was looking forward to another year maybe of kind of Danny Ainge maybe fixing the front court a wee bit, and then Brad Stevens maybe getting a chance to coach a proper contender in Boston. And it saddens me that we might not. I mean, I don't know if he'll ever go back to coaching in the NBA, but I really like Brad Stevens as a coach, and I'm kind of disappointed not to see that.
I'm the same. I think I worry that he might have moved a bit too quickly. You know, don't know if he's got any front office chops. He's never. We'll see how it plays out.
He's backing himself anyway, because that is a bold move to kick off with. He's clearly got an idea of what he wants to do, and I just felt that it was such a surprising thing for Danny Ainge to leave, because it felt like for me he was basically just standing pat this season and waiting till next season to really make a move, as he showed that he could do on multiple occasions. He was prepared to cash the chips in, and I felt that next year was going to be the time that they would do that.
I think the problem is that, yeah, he has shown, he showed that he was prepared to cash the chips in 2007. But aside from that, he's been sitting on a lot, and a lot of assets have been wasted because they've become less valuable. He has, you know, also drafted Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, two absolute studs, but, you know, he has also missed on a couple of things and not gone at the right time. You know, he missed out on, you know, so, well, we can talk about Boston all day, but he has had his positives and negatives. But ultimately, I think Danny Ainge has done a stellar job throughout his career with the Celtics here. The next question comes from Point Wolf Ange. Who has the most desirable head coaching position right now, and rank in order of most desirable to least desirable?
Coaching Luca has got to be the most desirable, hasn't it? Like, I mean, yeah. They've got to rejig that, don't get me wrong, but going in and telling a front office, like, and maybe contributing to some of the strategic decision making with your thoughts and having the chance to try and build a winner around Luca seems to me really great. The Magic's a good position as well, because we've got a young team that's on the up, and I'm so excited about the direction that we're going in. Like, and I, honestly, right, one of the most underrated bits of business at the trade deadline was a lot of people thought we got a poor return for Fournier, but see that trade exception that we got? That is so valuable, because if we are surprisingly good next year, that gives us the chance to be a buyer. And I think that is really valuable. And then obviously Dame Lillard as well. Like, that's another great position.
Why, can I ask, though, as an Orlando Magic fan, I'm a big fan of Steve Clifford. What happened there?
He didn't want to be coaching a team that's doing what we're doing. And he didn't have... Steve Clifford's really good at instilling good habits. He's creative with his offensive schemes, really good out of timeouts. Can you remember a Magic coach was that good, like, sort of running plays out of timeouts? Brilliant. Really, really good coach in mind, but just not got the... He just didn't want to be coaching a team doing what we are doing. He didn't really want to be developing. He wants to be coaching a contender. I'd like him to get the chance to do that, but I think it was the right thing to move on. And I went on an American podcast, the Orlando Magic Daily one, where I said, I think it was in February or March, I said, at the end of this season, it's going to be Mo Bamba or Steve Clifford, because Clifford just doesn't like him. And for all Bamba's faults, you could make something out of the longest wingspan in NBA history and, like, probably the best three shooting action in the team, you know. Like, he's a really smooth three. So, I just think it wasn't the right fit at the right time. Clifford did a good job getting us to the playoffs twice, but at the same time, I think there was a ceiling on where he could take the team in the current sort of direction that the franchise is going. I think it's right to move on. But I think he could be a good coach somewhere else, but there are so many good coaches out there right now.
Yeah. Yeah, so just to run through some of the other ones. So we got Washington Wizards. Brooks is out of there. We've got Obviously, Terry Stotts out in Portland.
Yep.
Orlando Magic, Steve Clifford is gone. Nate Bjorgen out of Indiana. This was a weird one because he only just joined the... Yeah, he joined them last season. I wonder what's going on there. But then Indiana is always an absolute mystery. New Orleans Pelicans, again, Stan Van Gundy was only there for one season. He basically never really got a chance to... I feel bad for him because he's obviously had some issues sort of connecting with the players, but I think he's a good coach and he'll probably get another run somewhere. And of course,
just on that though, do you think he's like from the kind of old school in terms of thinking and values and stuff like that? And maybe that just doesn't chime with like the rookies of the last few years.
I think I think that he's got some of that in him, but also his systems and his the systems that he installs. Look at that roster, that is built for a modern coach with new ideas. The guy who is you need to build a franchise around, quite frankly, is 6'7", but he's like 500 pounds, and he can leap like a ballerina. So do you play him at center or do you want him handling the ball? Because he's also probably the second best passer in the team. You've got this lanky Kevin Durant like character, Kevin Durant light almost, who needs the ball to be a scorer, but he's do you really want the ball in his hands when you've got Zion? But also you want those guys to be leaping as well because they got great athleticism. Would you prefer to put the ball in the hands of a point guard? And do you want that point guard shooting? So, maybe we need to get a bit more, get Lonzo Ball out and get some. It's just a complex situation. I don't think his old school practices are built for it, quite frankly.
Yeah, I think that's a really good assessment. I agree with everyone.
And then, of course, we spoke about Brad Stevens out of Boston Celtics.
I mean, that's a great opportunity as well, for anyone. And actually, it was maybe because we just talked about it, I kind of disregarded it. I honestly think in Portland, Dallas, and Boston, you've got three teams that with the right coaching appointment and maybe just one or two of the right moves could be really, really in a great position to contend. If you want a sort of longer developmental kind of curve, the Magic are great. With the right moves, the Pelicans could be great. The only one that's a bit sort of stodgy is kind of Indiana for me. And then and Washington, again, it just feels like they're treading water. So I'd say those two are probably the least attractive. Sorry if there's any fans of either team watching. But I think those are the two least attractive roles for me. I think the rest of them, you can kind of see why they would be exciting to anyone,
So let's move on a little bit then. We've got a few more questions just to wrap up. Shout out to Hoopin' and Lutin, Elliot from Hoopin' and Lutin. I mean, he was just on the chat. I think he's gone to bed now. But also, I shout out to him. I made a purchase from Hoopin' and Lutin earlier this week, and he always has the best service, and it came within 24 hours and couldn't be happier with the purchase. So his question was, he had a couple of questions, but we'll go with this one. And it sort of builds on what we were talking about earlier. Which players do you think would have the best trash-talking mothers?
Oh, goodness me. I don't know that much about the genealogy of that many NBA players, but I'm trying to think, like, and hopefully, is Marcus Smart's mum still with us? Do you know?
Like, not too, sorry. Is, no.
I imagine, like, she's, even if she's not, she's, I'm sure in her day, she must have been quite good at dishing it out.
To me, I think it's going to be like mother, like son, So I'm thinking of the legendary trash talkers. Like Kevin Durant, Kevin Garnett, mm-hmm. Actually Kevin Durant's mom is pretty awesome.
Yeah,
you see her on the sideline at the moment. and he likes to trash talk. Also, I wonder if like Joe Ingles has probably got a pretty sort of mouthy mother, you know, and
some Australian bogan.
Anyway,
I've got a lot of time for the Joe Ingles of the world, for the Nikola Jokic pre-MVP conditioning. See the players that just don't have an athlete's body, but they're there in sheer basketball craft alone. I love players like that.
Definitely. Ross says Caruso's mum. I don't know why. he's pretty trash talky, I guess.
He's a fascinating player, by the way. He's almost like a kind of an anomaly in the whole way that the league is now. Like, he's just something from. He's almost like, remember that cartoon Taz with the Tasmanian Devil? Like, yes. he's the equivalent of that in the NBA.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I like that comparison. And then Elliot did have another question. But like, what players do you think would have the most bizarre pets?
Clay Thompson. Anything to do with bizarre, Clay Thompson is the go-to.
He's got some pretty cool. He's got an awesome dog. I don't know who's being shown here. Is that Dwight Howard with a snake?
Yeah,
that looks like Dwight Howard.
Is that his?
I guess so.
I'm thinking that's
apparently Captain Kirk saying that's Dwight Howard. Yeah, I'm not sure. I think what is a weird pet? Like lizards or to be fair, Shaq, right? Shaq has got the weirdest pets because he's got he bought a tiger from the Tiger King. You know, and he's got all these weird and wonderful animals. So yeah.
Part of me thinks that Shaq will just have a menagerie of animals and he'll have three favourites and refer to the rest as others.
Yeah. So there's a really good couple of... there's a nice...
That's cute, man.
That's Russell Westbrook there with a cute dog. Yeah, there's a lot of good ones.
Russell Westbrook pet, isn't it?
It is. Keep that slideshow rolling, Kirk. And maybe we'll post some of those pictures on the Twitter account afterwards, so people who are just listening to the audio later can join in. So we'll get it moving then. I don't know whether you've had a chance to think, but have you got any games that you're particularly looking forward to this week? What's your game of the week?
Any Suns Clippers game, just all of them, all of them, especially. If we can contrive a situation where we get Chris Paul and Kawhi Leonard back in the court, that is just box office, man.
Definitely.
It's so, so good. And, yeah, what I will say is I can totally see, and I enjoyed reading your piece about it could be a wasted trip to the conference finals. However, what I would say is Ty Lue, Paul George, and, the rest of that well-constructed roster, I think they will be bettered if Kawhi Leonard's not there. In fact, I'm pretty confident that they won't do it. And I mean, it could be 4-1, more likely maybe it'd be 4-2. But I think it'll still be good. It's not just going to be a foregone conclusion where every game's the Suns controlling it or anything like that. There's going to be ebbs and flows and it's going to be excellent. I think the other series is going to be might actually be more competitive if Kawhi doesn't make it. I think the Hawks, I just love, do you know what, right? For all LeBron's moaning, and I totally see his point, there's so many guys that you would like to see.
We're entering the new generation. This is good for the NBA.
This is great for the NBA, and I'm absolutely loving it. And the fact that the Suns, who obviously, as you say, you mentioned about the bubble last year, but really have sort of come on and really done well this year. And then the Hawks, I mean, have really turned the tables in the East. I mean, that has really set the cat amongst the pigeons for that conference for the next few years to come, because other teams are going to be looking at what the Hawks have done this year. Pandemic and condensed season and rushing people back, all of that notwithstanding, people are going to look at what the Hawks have done and think, do you know what? We make a couple of good moves and we get the right pieces working in the right way, we can actually contend for a spot, at least in the conference finals. And that, I think, is really healthy for the East, because it has been lagging behind the West for a long, long time now. And I think that sort of, that carrot there for teams to really think, do you know what, if we actually go and we be a bit bold, then it could pay off, I think will be really, really good for that conference. But as the Western Conference Finals, I'm looking forward to watching. Well, what do you expect the NBA Finals to be, by the way? I'm curious.
I'm thinking it's probably going to be Suns-Bucks.
Yeah.
I think that's the way that it's looking at it. But then, I tweeted out earlier, I have no idea who the champion is going to be. I have...
How good
continued...
is that, though? Like,
yeah, that's
no
great.
Idea.
I've continually written off the Hawks. Not because I think bad of them. They just keep on getting better and showing me things that I haven't seen, you know? They could still pull out a few things that I haven't seen, you know, still. So I'm not ruling them out. And if Kawhi gets back, Ross in the chat doesn't seem to think he's going back, but if Kawhi does get back, then that could change the Clippers Sun series. So we'll see. But your game, you're looking forward to the next game, which is Suns Clippers, which is on Thursday, I believe, by the time this audio has come out. My game actually is, I'm really looking forward to game one of that Hawks Bucks series, because that's where we get to really see how this series is going to play out. And that's on Wednesday.
Yeah, that's fair enough, man. Like, it's going to be a real tone setter. I think of all the, we've seen so many comebacks from sort of 2-0 down in the playoffs this year, yeah, and teams that are behind. But I really feel that first game in the Bucks Hawks series is going to be massive. If the Hawks take it, I think, like, any sort of set of circumstances is on the table. If the Bucks take it, I think I would back them to go on and take the series from there, yeah, maybe not even falling behind at any point, just being in charge the whole way, you know. And I think that's really important. Home court advantage, I think, in both of them is going to be massive. If any team can steal a game, and we've not actually seen that be as prevalent, funnily enough, even with crowds back in arenas, there's been so many games won on the road. But
yeah,
I think home court advantage in these conference finals is going to be massive.
It's going to be fun. We've got a good fun week ahead of us, and it's been a pleasure to be on this show to preview all of those games. Shout out to, we got a new follower on Twitch, Specky JMC. Hi Specky, how's it going? And don't forget that you can subscribe for free if you have Amazon Prime. So if you do have Amazon Prime, make sure you click that subscribe button on Twitch. Also make sure you go follow us on Discord, discord.me/doubleclutchuk. And you can find us on all social medias at doubleclutchuk as well. But Stu, where can we find you?
The instructions just above my head there. Hodgy the Hack. If you fling that into Instagram, YouTube, Facebook and Twitter, then you'll find me on all of those things. I'm producing podcasts. This is my fourth one today, which is pretty remarkable. And you'll also see my byline on quite a bit of work at Sky Sports, and also putting together all the wire copy and making sure that we don't miss any of the key stories on the Sky Sports digital output, and occasionally putting together your column, mate.
Thank you very much. Always grateful. So it's been a joy to have you on the show. Glad you finally managed to get right. Well, glad we finally managed to get you on board.
Apologies for the internet. That won't happen next time. It's just because I've run back from being on.
You're all good.
Thank you for
having
me, man. I'm a big fan. Like what you guys do, as I said at the start of the show, for the community in this country. And I think you've played a vital role in growing the game, and you've continued to. And I've dipped in on occasion to what you guys have done, but I didn't realise the production value was quite... I thought it was just like a default thing, but seeing this all singing, all dancing, Captain Cook in the background could like literally drive the Starship Enterprise. It's awesome.
That's his job, and we couldn't pick anyone better to do it. But also shout out to Matthew Wellington, who's going to be cutting up the audio afterwards to release this as a podcast. So thanks to you, thanks to them, and thanks to everyone who's joined in the show on the chat today. We will catch you all later this week on socials, and next week back here on Twitch.
Peace.